The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Sometimes it's the normal, sometimes it's the abnormal, and sometimes it's the paranormal, but it's always beyond reality. Welcome to the program, everyone. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm your host, J.V. Johnson, and I'm excited about tonight's program because this has become a tradition around Christmas time, holiday time. Jeff Belanger, good friend, great friend to the paranormal community, is going to be our guest tonight, and we're going to talk about Christmas folklore and legends like the Krampus or Der Belschnickel. And these things are, you know, we often think of Christmas being, you know, all fluffy and fun. These legends are not so much fun. They're actually kind of nasty. And we're going to get into that with Jeff Belanger tonight, and I'm really excited about it because it's become a lot of fun to do this every year. I think this might be the third year we've done it, right? I'll have to ask Jeff, but I think it's the third year we've done it. So I'm excited to do that. We'll bring Jeff in, of course, after the first break. I want you to take the time to go to the YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe. Just go to YouTube and search for JV Johnson. When you find it, just hit the subscribe button. There's no obligation. There's no fee. There's nothing. It just makes you part of our YouTube community, which we're anxious to have you be part of. That's where our chat room is. We have a great archive of back episodes there, plus the show streams live there every night. If there isn't a radio station in your marketplace carrying the show, it'll be on YouTube live, streaming live. For you to enjoy. Looking ahead, tomorrow night's another great night here on Beyond Reality Radio. We've got Cindy McGill joining us. You remember Cindy? She's been here before. Cindy is a master dream interpreter, and she's going to take your phone calls and help you unlock what your dreams are telling you. This is always a very popular topic because we all have those very odd dreams. Sometimes they're related to a tragic incident. Sometimes they just come out of nowhere. Sometimes they're related to someone who you have an interest in, right? I mean, there's all sorts of weird dreams that we have, and Cindy McGill will help us navigate that. Thursday night's program, Lon Stickler will be here. Excuse me, that's Strickler, and he's a Freudian researcher. He's an author, and he'll talk about winged humanoids that have been seen around Chicago, as well as talk about alien disclosure. Now, every time we talk about these winged humanoid creatures, I immediately think of the Mothman because they resemble that description. And I'm fascinated with the Mothman story, so this ought to be a great night and a great conversation. That's Thursday night's program. Friday, of course, will be a best of. And then on Monday, Colin Dickey will be here. He's an author and a speaker. He'll talk about the age-old tradition of telling ghost stories at Christmas. He also has books on ghosts, aliens, and the unexplained. So a lot of great stuff coming up on Beyond Reality Radio. Hey gang, it's JV here. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Beyond Reality Radio. Some of you are new to the program, and some of you have been with us for years. And no matter if you're interested in ghosts, the UFO phenomenon, conspiracy discussions, or any of the other topics we explore on this program, we do it for you. Our goal here is to help find answers to some of the world's most enduring mysteries. And as we continue to bring you interviews and discussions each night, it's important that we get your feedback and even more importantly, your support. The media landscape is forever changing, and as it does, we need to be able to change with it. That's why it's important for you, right now, to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Once on YouTube, just search for JV Johnson. You'll find it there. Subscribe. It's all free, and it'll make you part of our global community. In addition, Beyond Reality Radio is available as a podcast. Go to your favorite podcast platform and search for Beyond Reality Radio and subscribe there as well. And finally, we have an archive program that you may enjoy as well. This show can be found on major podcast platforms, and it's called Beyond Reality Paranormal. By supporting us in one or all of those places, you can be sure we'll be able to continue to deliver quality shows to you, no matter what form the media landscape takes. As a paranormal historian, I promise you the best and most entertaining conversations as we continue to hunt for the truth. Tonight's guest is a premier researcher and paranormal investigator. He's also a noted TV host and personality. He's an honored radio and podcast host. He's an accomplished musician and author. Of course, I'm talking about good friend Jeff Belanger. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, JV, great to be back with you. Now, it must be near a holiday.
It is, right? Now, I said everything you asked me to, but I still haven't gotten that $20. I don't know if it was in the mail.
Or... Yeah, no, I feel like we talk at like Halloween and Christmas.
Yeah, I know. But it's always...
What's wrong with Easter? What do you have against Easter?
Well, you know, that's going to be one of my questions as we get going here. But I'm excited about this because it has become a bit of a tradition for us here. And, you know, one of the things that I happen to note as we're getting this program started tonight is that we're going to talk about some rather, and I'll use the word creepy. I'm not sure that completely describes the stories and the folklore and the legend that we're going to talk about, like Krampus. But they're kind of creepy stories, whatever it happens to be. But I couldn't find any creepy Christmas music. It's all pretty cheery.
You know, there's, Carol of the Bells. I don't know who it is. Someone posted it on Facebook. It's a Krampus song. It's pretty good. So, yeah. The old one, there'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago, right? I mean, that's the one line from the Andy Williams song that everybody knows. And I remember hearing that as a kid and being like, ghost stories? We never tell ghost stories at Christmas. They used to. And I think we're starting to again, but you're right. It's lacking. It's completely lacking, and it's a shame.
I think there's a vacuum there. I know you're a musician. I play and sing. We could come up with a nice little album here of creepy Christmas songs.
You know, I don't know how fast we can make this happen, but I did a song a few years ago called My Christmas Tree is Haunted. It's a blues tune that I wrote, and my father-in-law sang it. One of my best friends growing up actually, like, produced it. And this is my bragging rights for life musically. I put it out every year. I just let people listen to it for free. And a buddy of mine years ago called and said, look, I do this annual charity album called Rock for Xmas, and Eddie Money gave us a song, and Cheap Trick gave us a song, and some other bands. Can we use your song? And I was like, yeah. So, and then there was a concert. I met Eddie Money, God rest his soul. So Eddie Money was the headliner, and I got to meet him backstage, and I'm like, well, you know, we've got a song together on an album, Eddie Money. I mean, we're practically colleagues. And he just went, ugh, because he was a mess. But but anyway, so yeah, I could email it to you like right now. You could play it.
All right.
I need an email.
Yeah, send it to – do you have Slick Eddie's email address?
I do.
Yes.
I'll send it to him. Okay, I can send it to him in like seconds. While you talk, I'll get this.
That's perfect. And then he can forward it on to me, and we can get this on by the end of the show. That'd be awesome. It's always fun to have you on, though, Jeff. And we get an opportunity not only to have a little bit of laughter about these topics, but we also learn quite a bit. And I guess the first thing we need to establish, because it's kind of, things are changing. There's a little bit of flux going on. But in general, would you say Christmas is creepy?
Oh listen, people think of me as a Halloween guy traditionally, and I can tell you right now, Christmas has it all over Halloween. Halloween is just a time when the veil between the world of the living and world of the dead is thin, right? It's a time for ghosts, but ghosts don't generally hurt you.
Right.
Christmas has monsters that will drag you away, drag your children away, take you to a cave and eat you and kill you. Like that Halloween doesn't do that. Right, Halloween's just spooky stuff.
Right,
it's nothing, you know, compared to Christmas. Halloween just doesn't have it on Christmas, and because the reason is the time of year. You're talking about the winter solstice. If you go far enough north, the sun doesn't even rise anymore.
Right,
you know, on the winter solstice, that is a really scary time. That's a time when people wonder, will it ever come back? And what monsters are out there lurking? And I mean, all these things, right? It's such a huge part of the of this time of year, and it's founded in fear of the winter, fear, will I freeze to death? Will I keep my sanity? Will I be able to have enough food to survive? All that stuff is a huge part of this.
Let's talk about Christmas as we kind of see it through the rose-colored glasses that have been provided to us here in America anyway. I saw a film title on Netflix, The Man Who Invented Christmas, and I think it's about Charles Dickens, right? I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
Did Charles Dickens really define what we know today as Christmas and how we observe it?
Absolutely. That movie, I love that movie, but I'm a huge Charles Dickens fan. Not only did did Charles Dickens really invent Christmas? He took the idea. Christmas was not a big deal. In 1843, when he published A Christmas Carol, a ghost story, by the way, when he published that, it really helped define that this is a time for charity, for taking stock of your life, for reaching out to others, for being together with family, what it really could mean. But more than anything, that is a story of redemption, and the redemption that comes when you face your ghosts, when you face maybe even your demons. You know, you look into your past and you really face those things. The story got bigger and bigger every single year, but over in America, you got to remember, it still was not a big deal. It was not Christmas still didn't quite make it here, and really, it was Charles Dickens who brought it to America, and he brought it to Boston. And the reason it took so long is because when Charles Dickens first visited America in the 1840s, he got to have dinner at a Baltimore restaurant. And while he was there, he was served dinner by slaves, and he was disgusted by it. Mm-hmm. He said he realized, I'm now a party to slavery. Just having someone serve me food who's an owned slave disgusted him, and he vowed not to return to America so long as slavery was in place. After the Civil War was over, America's hurting, and Charles Dickens knows this. His story, his Christmas Carol, is exactly what's needed. And so he brings it over to Boston in 1867, is when he arrives in Boston, a place he considered his second home, and he stays at the Parker House Hotel. And he practices reading that story again and again in front of a mirror and performs it to a Boston audience. And one of the people in the audience was so moved by the story, he actually gave everyone the day off for Christmas Day, because back then you still had to go to work, you still had to go to school on Christmas Day, and he gave everyone the day off and sent everyone home with a turkey. And it's just this really cool, story about just how it all got started, how it got to be such a big deal. And that was really when Christmas had a big turning point in America. It's after the Civil War, we're trying to heal, and now Charles Dickens has this story, and it just kind of catches on, and year after year it just gets bigger and bigger.
You know, there's probably not a more creepy image that sticks in my mind than, I'm not sure which of the versions it was. I think it may have been the 1938 version of the film, where Scrooge is going home after his day at work with Cratchit, and he gets to the door and he goes to open the door, and on his door knocker, the ghost of Marley,
Jacob Marley,
is superimposed over that door knocker. That haunts me to this day, and I know it's just a movie version of the story, but the image is quite haunting.
It is, and it's such a powerful scene in the story, because everyone thinks of the three ghosts. There are four in the story, and Jacob Marley is arguably the most important. He's the one that says, "Look, man, your life is a mess. Where I am, this is where you were 7 years ago, this very night, and I've procured this chance for you, this chance for redemption, and it all comes through facing down those ghosts." That ghost story, so powerful. Now, Dickens was not the first to tell a Christmas ghost story, not by a long shot. He just mastered it. It was a tradition that had been going on for years and years at that point. He just took it to a whole other level.
You know, I was going to ask you, do we have any sense of how Dickens was inspired to write that particular story the way he did? Is there something else along the way that tips his hand a little bit as to how he decided to write this, or don't we know?
Well, if you saw the movie The Man Who Invented Christmas, it's very romanticized, as far as how it sort of all got inspired and things like that. But I think to some degree, we're all Scrooge, right? And that's what Dickens understood. Scrooge is us. We get older, we get more cranky, we get more miserly.
Right.
Year after year, we lose our way. We lose the childhood magic. And so did he. He had his own troubles. He had debts and bills and all that other stuff. And so, I think he took inspiration from his own life, from his own childhood, his own memories, because that's what authors do. That's where you reach in. And he hit something. He hit gold. And we all could relate to it. But that's it. I mean, yeah, dude, you haven't had a boss like that in your life?
I was a boss like that.
You were? Yeah, see?
And I've
what
had
melted
one
your heart? What did it?
It's just the right set of circumstances that come together, and you start to get it. You know, there's a point where you just kind of get it,
Of course. No, I've worked for people like that where you're just, I mean, they don't see it. I mean, you could show them the movie and be like, you know, that's you, right? You know? Yeah. Like, no, it can't possibly be me. I'm great. I'm super kind, you know? But the reality is we've all worked for Scrooge and to some degree we've all been Scrooge. And that's the thing that we got to fight against. And I think that's one of the things that is offered to us every year. You know, it's offered to us every day, but we get reminded of it at a holiday like Christmas, at a time like New Year's, you know, where you make your resolutions or whatever. You start to take stock. You know, the year slows down and you say, all right, what am I doing with my life? What do I want to do? What do I want to be? And we have to visit ourselves and our pasts. And sometimes it's not a pretty picture when you're going to face that stuff down for anybody. But hopefully you come out on the other side and you're better for it.
I happen to note somewhere along the way in the stuff I was reading in preparation for tonight's discussion that you even admitted that you're getting a little more Scroogey every year.
Hell yeah, I am. I mean, God, it happens. Man, you get older, you got a family, and you got mortgage and bills and jobs, and you're so inundated with all that stuff that life just feels like a series of tasks. You wonder where yourself is in all that. You know, I know for me, all this started, my infatuation with the dark side of the holiday started, it was like 4 or 5 years ago. I was literally hanging the wreath on my front door. And I was just annoyed by it. I'm like, oh, this is another thing I have to do today. I got to put up the lights and put up the thing, and we got to grocery shop, and I got to do the, you know, take care of this and that. It's all that. It was just this long list of chores, and there was no joy in it whatsoever. And I'm like, man, why am I even doing it? And then when I started to investigate that and started to research the holiday, I went, oh, I'm doing it because the Norse god Odin has vanquished many horrible creatures who are screaming in the night and trying to get into our homes. And these wreaths, these evergreens, help keep them out. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's way cooler than just putting up a wreath and you know, just to keep up with the neighbors. Maybe they don't even know that. And then just one story led to another, and you realize, How can we enjoy the joy of this holiday, the light of it, the Santa Claus and all that stuff, without also understanding there's the dark side? And we've whitewashed this holiday. It's all of us. It's a collective thing. No, you know, we're all guilty. But I think this stuff is creeping back. It's creeping back because of movies, because of we're talking about it again. It's seeping back in because I think we understand we need the consequence, right? It's not just the gift giving. We also need the consequence.
We have about 20 seconds before we have to go to break, but I'll ask you this final question about A Christmas Carol. Which of the film versions are you most fond of? Do you have a favorite?
Yep, Alistair Sim. It was either 1951 or 1953. I feel like that one nails it above all others. That and Scrooge with Bill Murray.
I keep hearing that Bill Murray version coming up quite often. Now, you've got something pretty special going on right now with this Creepy Christmas. I think it's on Amazon Prime, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I've been talking about this for so long. I do a show called New England Legends for PBS and Amazon Prime, and it's just 8 episodes, but we just literally a week ago put up our Creepy Christmas holiday special. And it's so much fun. We explore not only the origins of the holiday, get to interview Santa Claus. We sat down with the actual guy, the big man himself.
Wow.
Of course, the one that's at Yankee Candle's headquarters in Deerfield, Massachusetts. And he was amazing, talking about his life. And then got to go to the Krampus Society of New England's annual Krampus Ball in Providence, Rhode Island. And that was pretty amazing to be surrounded by, I don't know how many, 30 or 40 Krampuses, Krampi, I don't know what the plural is there, but and there was a live goat there, which is, from now on, that's my new policy. I'll only go to parties where there's a live goat. And it's just such a fun adventure, just seeing that these creatures, these darker entities are kind of making a comeback throughout the region, really.
As we get into talking about these stories, these legends, this folklore, do you think the common thread through all of this is that these stories were designed to make people, specifically children, behave, to make them perform in some manner of a behavior that either society or parents wanted?
I think they were adapted for that. I think first and foremost, we've always had monsters. Always. We still do today. I mean, you know, we could name a list of serial killers and mass murderers and things like that, that are monsters, you know, absolute monsters. And I think the reason we talk about monsters in the abstract and have for thousands of years is because we all know, especially us adults, that they really do lurk out there. And there are dangers that can be hidden. And so I think sometimes we use these stories as a way to prepare us for the monsters that are in the real world. That being said, of course, we use them to make our lives easier. And if it's like, hey, you better behave, or you know, Krampus is going to get you. As a parent, you do what you got to do to survive, man. You know, like when your kid's acting up. When I was a kid, it was just, hey, Santa's watching, and you're not going to get presents this year unless you behave. And that, you know, that has some effect, but it's not quite the same as, hey, Krampus is watching, and if you don't behave, you're going to die.
Wow.
One has a little more impact. He's going to snatch you away from us. We're not going to be able to stop him. What can we do? He's Krampus. He's going to snatch you right out of your bed, stuff you in a burlap sack, and carry you to the mountains and eat you.
Wow. yeah, I mean, it seems like kids would start to fear Christmas approaching as opposed to looking forward to it with stories like that to think about.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? It is a dark and scary time of year. We take so much for granted today. It wasn't that long ago. I live just south of Boston, and we got a little snowstorm the other day. And of course, everyone runs to the. I know you live in a northern climate as well. Everyone runs to the grocery store. They got to get the bread and the milk, right? It's kingdom come. The worst storm we've had in my lifetime dumped like 3 feet on us, and within one day, the roads are clear and you can get out again, which is amazing, right? Like, hats off to all the guys and women that are out there making that happen. But 100 years ago, if you got 3 feet of snow and it stayed cold, you could be stuck inside for, you know, who knows? You could be stuck inside for weeks. And do you have enough firewood to burn? Can you get to firewood to keep warm? Do you have enough food? Can you hunt an animal in 3 feet of snow? Are you elderly? I mean, that is a real monster waiting for you.
No electricity?
That's right. Yeah, no electricity, no cable, no Amazon Prime Video, none of that. Right? You know, you literally were at the mercy of the elements. And a storm, if you lived a little bit outside of town and a road was just covered in snow and you couldn't get a wagon down there or even a horse, you were out of luck. You got to keep your sanity. You got to, you know, have enough food and all that other stuff. It was a life and death situation every single snowstorm. We forget that now because our world is so modern and taken care of. But it just wasn't that long ago where that was a real fear for people.
Let's talk a second about this tradition of telling ghost stories at Christmas time. You know, you referenced the song. What is it? It's the most wonderful time of the year. Is that the song?
That's Andy Williams, yeah.
The lyric comes from telling ghost stories. That tradition, you said, goes back a very, very long time. What's the connection? Why were ghost stories popular, and when did we stop doing that?
I can answer all that. So it started with the festival of Yule in the Nordic part of the world. They noticed that in wintertime, there's a sound that you just don't hear the other three seasons. It's this howling wind. The kind of wind that only comes when it's whipping through naked trees. You know, in the summer, there's leaves and things like that.
Right.
It makes more like a shush sound, right? But in the winter, it screams, it howls, it whips, and it bites because it's cold. And they hear voices in the wind. They would hear cries and screams. They were sure these are ghosts. And so they had to protect themselves from those ghosts. That's a time. That's a time for hauntings, for sure. You know, think of Poe's The Raven. Which is one of the most haunting poems ever written. It's set, I remember, the bleak December, right? It's set in December.
Right.
Winter is a scary time. So in the 1800s, especially in England, ghost stories at Christmas were just a huge part of the tradition. And every year, the magazines would publish them for people to read around the fireplace on Christmas. They would read these stories that were published, and authors were clamoring to write a great Christmas ghost story. And Dickens was no different. Dickens saw this and said, let me try my hand at it. So that he was just he took it to a whole other level, and his is the one we remember. Those ghost stories continued all the way into the 19-teens, 19-20s. But then something happened, and that was the Great Depression in America, and of course it affected the whole global economy. In the 1930s, when we're starting to come out of the Great Depression, that's the moment, that's the line in the sand where Santa Claus starts to emerge as first a corporate shill for Coca-Cola, right? I mean, that's the Coca-Cola company started using him to sell Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was used in advertisements. And the only way out of an economic depression is to spend money. Economists knew that. It's true then, it's true today. The only way out of depressions or recessions is for everyone to just feel confident enough to go spend money, and that gets the economy moving. So we're starting to come out of the Great Depression, and Christmas becomes this very big deal. The other thing to remember is that the holiday of Thanksgiving was always supposed to be celebrated on the last Thursday of November. That ever since Lincoln made it an official national holiday, it was the last Thursday of November. That's when it was supposed to be celebrated. That changed in the 1930s because businesses started lobbying the president saying, dude, we need more time between Thanksgiving and Christmas for shopping. This is the season that puts us in the black for profits for the year. And so the president figures what's good for the economy is good for America, and Thanksgiving was moved to the second-to-last Thursday of the fourth Thursday of the month, rather, the fourth Thursday of the month to give more time for Christmas shopping. This is when everything starts to go toward, like, commercial, spend money, Santa's this jolly figure, Krampus cards start to go away, the dark side starts to go away, and it's all about, this is joy, we spend money, we buy gifts, this is what this is all about. That was the time when everything changed.
A lot of these characters we're going to be talking about tonight, Krampus and others, kind of have an affiliation with Santa. So let's talk about Santa for a minute. Who was he? I mean, you did the official interview, so you got to know.
He was amazing. Oh, my God. So Nicholas was born in Myra, which is modern-day Turkey. And Nicholas came from a wealthy family, and he was an orphan. And instead of living off of his wealth, he decided to just give it away. He joined the priesthood and gave his wealth away because it made him feel good. And he would seek out people in need. He would people would leave their shoes or their socks out to dry at night, and he would slip money in them and things like that, or gifts, whatever they needed. And he just took great joy in giving away his wealth. After he passed on, he became Saint Nicholas, and they started naming churches after him. And his day of death is December 6, 343 AD. That's the day that he's venerated. That's the day he's celebrated. That's Saint Nicholas Day in many parts of Europe to this day. And that's the day Saint Nicholas comes to bring presents. And Saint Nicholas, of course, had cohorts: Krampus, Belschnickel, Black Peter. These darker figures, Père Fouettard in France, right? They're his cohorts. So this is good cop, bad cop. Santa's the good cop. These other guys are the bad cop. They deal with the naughty kids so Santa can deal with just the good ones and keep his hands clean. But they are absolutely partners. They're not enemies in any way. They work together.
We know Coca-Cola created what we would consider to be, I guess, the modern image of Santa. Did Coca-Cola do that around the world?
Yeah, so a lot was happening. Thomas Nass from Harper's Magazine started, drew Santa as more of like this heavier set, jolly old elf kind of guy. And you also, you can't say enough about the poem by Clement Moore, "'Twas
right.
the Night Before Christmas."
Right.
That came out in 1823. And originally published anonymously in Troy, New York, that poem defined, like, he laughed with like a bowl full of jelly. So Coca-Cola didn't purely invent it, right? Coca-Cola was building off of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas in 1823, the Thomas Nast illustrations in the late 1800s. They just took it to the next level, which was to make it a red suit with the white trim, the big white beard, and make him kind of a bigger figure. But they were following a trend that went back 100 years before that. But they really, when you think of Santa Claus today, the Coca-Cola company has so much to do with what you're picturing in your head.
I have to share a bit of a story here. My son is in Holland going to grad school. And the reason he went to Holland to go to grad school is because in undergrad school here in the States, he met a foreign exchange student who was attending for one semester, and she went back to Holland to finish her schooling, and he wanted to go follow her. So when they came and visited last Christmas, after he hadn't quite gone. He'd been over a few times, but hadn't gone to school yet. But anyway, and they brought back all of this stuff related to Black Pete.
Yeah.
Now, Black Pete is one of Santa's helpers. And by American standards in today's climate, I think most Americans would be appalled at what this stuff is. But the Dutch celebrate Black Pete, and Black Pete is, like you said, the bad cop in the relationship here. He's not quite as sinister as maybe a Krampus or a Belsnickel, but he handles the bad kids.
No, but he's going to go away, I promise you, because, you know, it's racist here. It's racist there, too. I mean, there's national, just so people understand the backstory of Black Peter. Black Peter was a slave, and Santa rescued him. He was a slave child, and Santa rescued him only to more or less make him work for Santa forever, which is, I don't, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
In parades today, he's always depicted as a white person in blackface.
Blackface, that's right.
That's racist. That's racist by any global standard that you want to measure it. And there have been protests now for years saying, like, we can't do this. And plus, people don't want to think about Santa enslaving anybody. You know, that he enslaves elves, not people. Right? That's his thing.
What?
So I think what you're going to see is over time, especially in Holland, he's just going to go away because it's not a pleasant story. But the folklore of it is that yes, Black Peter would go with Santa, and he would deal with the bad kids. Now he could do anything from like giving you a talking to maybe slap you around a little bit. And in the most extreme cases, Black Peter could indeed be lethal, but only on very rare occasions if the kid was just that bad.
Well, I know that you don't have, because you're on the phone with us for this particular interview, I know you don't have access to the YouTube channel, but I'm actually going to play a video during the break on our YouTube channel that actually shows a bunch of Black Petes arriving. My son shot this video and sent it to me because he thought it was quite interesting, and you'll get an idea of what it is. And St. Nick is there, and all the Black Petes are coming along with him. But Jeff, the traditions and the things we're going to be talking about in the next hour, not so happy, not quite as happy as Charlie Brown Christmas, right?
No, maybe not. But memorable, and that's what counts, right? as long as you remember.
That is what counts. We have, this is a short segment. We've only got a couple minutes because we went long in the last segment. But let's talk about Christmas globally. And do these stories, the type that we're going to speak about tonight, let's take America out of it because of the melting pot situation where we borrow a little bit from everybody. But do these stories permeate the globe?
Some do, sure, and some are, you know, super regional. Like there's the Welsh Mari Lod, this gray mare that rises from the grave on Christmas Eve, that seems pretty much centralized into just Wales, not even all of the UK. And then others, I think, spread because they're popular. Krampus caught on, you know, Krampus caught on beyond Germany. Belsnickel caught on beyond Germany. So I think wherever the European influence followed, so too did those monsters. You know, where the Europeans went, they took their creatures with them.
We've got about a minute and a half here before the break. We'll get into Krampus on the other side in detail. However, how old does the Krampus legend go back?
Well, I mean, you know, realistically, he goes back thousands of years if you want to talk about, like, Pan, right? The Pan character from like Greek mythology. You know, that's his roots go back that far. And then when they started to call him Krampus, I mean, that's only a few centuries. During the Protestant Reformation, a lot of these old monsters had to go. So it's really but the origins go back thousands of years easily.
Does the church, or did the church, let's say prior pre-Reformation, did the church accept and acknowledge these stories?
I think the Catholic Church has a tricky relationship with all this stuff because, on the one hand, if something scares you to church, then it's a good thing, right?
Right.
I mean, Catholicism, and I say that as a person raised Catholic, loves that there's a devil and demons and purgatory and all this stuff to kind of scare us into the church pews. I think something's lost when you don't have that darker side to bring up. But at the same time, they are pagan, and so I think, you know, even after the Reformation that the Christian leaders were like, look, we got to lose these pagan ways. It's one thing to call them just stories, but it's another to really believe in them. And so I think they always struggle with that, struggle with anything that takes away from the canon.
In the 20 seconds we have here before we have to go to break, let people know where they can get more information about all of your work, because there's so much stuff.
Yeah, well, my website, jeffbelanger.com, but also the whole series, including the Creepy Christmas episode, is on Amazon Prime. If you're a Prime member, it's free. If you're not, it's like 99 cents, I think, to download it. And it's also the New England Legends podcast, which I've been doing every week for over 2 years, just these short stories. And we've covered some of these Christmas, Creepy Christmas stories in the holiday podcast as well. So, and also my books are on Amazon and in bookstores everywhere.
A quick reminder, go to YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel, because it's a great way to participate in the program. We stream live there. Plus, there's an archive of about 450 back episodes of the show. Just go to YouTube and search for JV Johnson. You'll find it. And subscribe, please. There's no obligation or fee or anything. It's just click of a button and you're all set. You'll be part of our online community there. Plus, there's a great chat room. When the show streams live, you'll be able to participate in that as well. Also, like us on Facebook. And, Jeff, the moment of truth has come. Let's start talking about Krampus. Tell us who this creature, who, if anybody has seen Hollywood's version, certainly scary enough, but probably even scarier from the legend and the folklore. Tell us who Krampus is.
Krampus is a monster. He's a hairy man with hooves for feet. He's got horns coming out of his head. He's got a long red forked tongue. He's wrapped in chains so you can hear him coming, and he carries either a basket or a burlap sack where he snatches up naughty children, stuffs them in the basket, and takes them all back to his lair in order to kill them. And the thing is, he comes on a very specific day, December 5th. Because December 6th is St. Nicholas Day, so the 5th is Krampus Day. That's the day Krampus comes, and if you somehow manage to survive that day, then you're probably going to be okay for another year at least. And given that we're already past December 5th, we've made it, and maybe a moment of silence for those who haven't.
So Krampus comes on the 5th of December, kind of cleans up things a little bit,
right?
before Santa shows up.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you know, it must be good to be Santa, right? You show up and, here's presents for all the good girls and boys, because that's all that's left. There's no bad ones around. They've been cleaned up by Krampus. He's done the dirty work, and now it's just good girls and boys. And all I can imagine was, I mean, I actually got to interview a guy at the Krampus Ball, which was amazing. He said when he was a kid, his mother was from Austria, and they had Krampus and St. Nicholas would visit at Christmas time every year. That was a tradition. And he said it was terrifying. He's like, you know, there's St. Nicholas, and you're so happy, but then right behind him was Krampus. And, you know, this guy was, he's younger than us, you know, I mean, he was probably in his 30s. So, I mean, he grew up with this not that long ago. And I think, wow, that's kind of amazing, right? Like, there's the yin and yang right there for you. And if you really are scared, I mean, we have to all remember being kids and wondering when it's Christmas Eve, like, well, have I been good? Will I get any presents at all? Will I get coal or sticks in my stocking? You know, you get those nerves. You think you've been pretty good, but
sure.
I did break that lamp over the summer, and Mom did like that lamp. And, you know, I fought with my sister, whatever. And but imagine if it's December 5th. And you're a little German kid 100 years ago, you know, hey, it's almost time for bed.
And Dad's downstairs rattling some chains.
Darn right he is, right? Yeah, just like, oh, what's that? Oh, nothing. Just, I don't know. I didn't hear anything.
Wow.
And you're laying in bed just shivering with fear, you know, just waiting. Like, will the sun come up? Will I ever see daylight again? Or is this it? Is this the end for me? That must have just been just horrifying. I can only imagine.
You know, we know what the origin of St. Nicholas / Santa is. This description you gave us of Krampus sounds very, very demonic. Do we know what the origin of that creature is?
So Pan, the creature from like Greek folklore and,
right,
and things like that. The pan flute. He's got the horns, the upper torso of a man. He's got the hooves like feet. I mean, that's Pan. It's where we get the word panic. Comes from Pan. And Pan was not necessarily evil at all. It's just once the Catholic Church started to Christianize the world, that became sort of a devil figure, right? It represented chaos. that's what Pan was, you know, and so chaos is bad, and we represent order, and so that's the devil. That's the devil figure. When people picture the devil, the man with horns and the hooves and all that, that's the Pan figure. So it's not really fair to call Krampus evil. He's not. He's doing very just and noble work. You know, I mean, he's out there cleaning up the bad guys, and that's what his task is. You don't have to like it; it doesn't have to look pretty. But I wouldn't call him evil, and nor would I call Pan evil. He was just chaotic, but we relabeled him somewhere along the way, and so I don't think it's fair. It's calling him demonic is the same thing that you know, our Roman Catholic ancestors did centuries ago when they were trying to explain to everybody what's right and what's wrong to a culture that's illiterate and doesn't have access, of course, to mass media because it hasn't been invented yet. It's all you have are stories, and you have to explain to them that, yeah, your old ways, those old gods, those old creatures, the fey folk, you know, these half-breeds of half-human, half-horse, half-bird, whatever, they've all got to go. Because they're not of us, so they must be demonic. So to me, that's more a label that we're using to try to get pagan people to move away from it. But if you look at his behavior, to me, a demon just is out to hurt people and hurt good people if they can, right? Like, that's the grand prize: take a good person and hurt them.
Right.
Krampus isn't going to hurt a good person. You're safe. It's the bad ones that have to worry.
Good point. Now, you attended one of these Krampus balls. Tell us a little bit about it, and also help us understand why they've become so popular. Well, people do Krampus balls, they do Krampus runs. You know, this has really become it's a tradition in its own right here in the United States.
Yeah, so I found out about it. It was a couple years ago. And I got in touch with, you know, it's a small world, right? And so the guy that runs the whole Krampus Society of New England is also a tour guide in Docent at the Lizzie Borden House, which is, you know, haunted.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's like, yeah, man, we met at the Lizzie House. I was like, oh, my God, of course we did, you know. And so he runs this thing. And so what they do is they'll kind of do this parade down the street in Providence, and then they meet in a hall. And the year I went, the year we filmed, there was, I mean, like literally like 30-plus Krampuses. And some of the costumes were amazing. I mean, serious investment of time and money putting these things together. And I get it. Some of these folks are doing cosplay the rest of the year, and that night they were Krampus. But it just keeps getting bigger, and they raise money for charity, and, you know, they have contests for, you know, who's the best-looking Krampus, and everybody cheers to vote. They have food, and there's beer and all this other stuff. It was great. I mean, it was such a cool time. But the best part was just talking to people, like, why do you do it? And, you know, people would joke, like, well, I'm on the naughty list anyway. I might as well just fully embrace it. And, you know, I get that. But I think also there's something very primal about this. You know, when you go to the mall as a kid and you wait in line to see Santa Claus, man, that's just so saccharine sweet. You know, it's so manufactured and it's so commercialized. You go to a Krampus ball, that's a different thing. Like, you're getting to the primal part of it. I loved it. I completely loved it. I thought this is really cool. I love that I'm doing this at Christmas time. And I mean, my daughter is almost 13 years old now, and I don't know if they have an age limit on these things, but she's raring to go too. She's like, I want to go to the Krampus ball, and I'm like, I want to take you. Like, I just don't know if I'm allowed. It's great.
Before we move on, I have a confession to make. I have not seen the movie that came out, I don't know how many years ago now it was, the Krampus.
2015.
Was it 2015? I haven't seen that film. I'm assuming you have by the gasp. And
Yes. How
true does it stay to the legend?
Okay, I'm the worst person to give a review of this movie. I loved it, but I'm so biased. I was so thrilled to see Krampus on the big screen. I saw it, you know, first when it came out. I've seen it, you know, on video, everything. It's so video. There's no such thing anymore. So, but I think they nailed the spirit of what he is. They nailed that part. Now, of course, it's a Hollywood movie, and as with many horror movies, it delves into comedy, right? It gets sort of comical how silly some of the attacks are and things like that. But what the creature looked like, and ultimately, I don't want to ruin anything, but like ultimately, I think they really nailed what he is. He was there, I mean, to save Christmas. He did. He does. You should see it. I think you should have, like, It's a Wonderful Life, Krampus, and then, like, Creepy Christmas. Like, that could be your, like, trifecta. Get some eggnog, and you are all set.
That sounds like the perfect night.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk in this particular segment about Belsnickel, because this is another one that, they're all interesting, so this is no exception.
Yeah, so the Belsnickel, if Krampus is a little too much for you and your family, like, you know, you don't want to tell your kids that their lives are in danger, then maybe the Belsnickel's for you. The Belsnickel, it literally means Nicholas and furs. And during the Protestant Reformation, the Protestants were trying to do away with all the Catholic saints. Saint Nicholas is the most popular, was then, is now, right? It's the one everybody knows. He brought the gifts. But they still wanted someone to bring the gifts, but they also wanted someone to give out the punishment. So Belsnickel would be dressed in furs, his face would be covered in soot, and he would show up anytime, you know, a couple of weeks before Christmas, anytime in there, and he might ask, are there any good children in the house? And you might say, yeah, little Mary here has been an angel all year, and Mary might get a little present or might get some candy. And he'd ask, are there any bad children in the house? And they'd say, yes, well, little J.V. Johnson over there, he's been naughty all year. And so the Belsnickel would take little J.V. out to the backyard and tie him up to a tree and beat his ass with switch of sticks.
Ow.
I know.
Ow.
And the whole idea was that he could get the naughty little JV to get right in time for Christmas and behave again and put the kid back on the right track. That's the idea of the Belsnickel. Hugely popular in Pennsylvania Dutch country. The Germans brought him over. He's been around Pennsylvania Dutch country since really the early 1700s, and he also made it back into popular culture on the show The Office.
That's right,
Dwight
yeah.
Schrute
mm-hmm.
Dressed up as Belsnickel at one time. So I think he's making a comeback too. And we found this house in Niantic, Connecticut. It's called the Smith Harris House. It's one of these historic homes, museums, and things like that. And at Christmas time, instead of bringing in Saint Nicholas, they now bring in a Belsnickel. And unfortunately, that Belsnickel won't beat your kid, but he does hand out candy and he does carry a stick and stuff like that. And I'm just like, this is so cool that someone is choosing to do this, to be a little bit different, and bring back a tradition that really never fully went away, but is just getting bigger again.
Does the Germanic culture lend itself to these kind of stories? Because, you know, we not only do we have these Christmas time stories, but we've got, you know, the Brothers Grimm, and we've got these Hansel and Gretel and these other fairy tales that are
so dark.
Is it German culture and German history that kind of lends itself to this?
It must, because I mean, you know, did you ever hear the story of the Sandman, the original Sandman?
I don't think I have.
So the original version of the Sandman, Der Sandman, goes back to the early 1800s, and in the story, parents would tell their children, go to bed and shut your eyes because the Sandman's coming. And if your eyes are open when the Sandman arrives, he will blast sand into your eyes, popping your eyeballs out of their head. He'll grab the eyeballs, bring them back to the moon, and feed them to his children with little hooked beaks and eat them up. You'll be blind. Now, in the morning, go ahead and feel the corners of your eyes. If you feel a little sand in there, it's a darn good thing your eyes were shut at night and you didn't see the Sandman.
Wow.
I'm like, talk about how to put a kid to bed, right?
Wow.
Think they're asking for three glasses of water and a snack? No.
No, close the eyes and keep them shut at all costs. Hey, let's quickly jump to our phone line here. This is Field Guy from our chat room from Louisiana. Hey, Field Guy.
Hello, JV. How you doing today?
Hey, are you on a speakerphone? If so, pick up your line because we can't hear you very well.
I wish I knew how to pull up my phone. This thing's all messed up.
All right. Well, what's your question? I'm having trouble hearing you, but I think we can get it.
Okay. I just wanted to know, Jeff mainly about he was talking about the pan stuff in the last segment and stuff. I'm trying to figure it out because I don't really know too much about Krampus and everything. What's the simplest kind of explanation that you can kind of explain it, like, for a simple person like myself?
Of Krampus or Pan?
Mainly Pan.
Pan, okay.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, in Pan, in ancient Greek mythology, he's the god of the wild, the shepherds, the mountain, the wild, rustic music. I mean, he's kind of chaotic. He's got legs and the legs of a goat and hooves like a goat. He's got the upper body of a man, and he's got horns on his head. So he's also known as like a faun or a satyr, which is a half man, half goat. So that figure, I mean, you've seen it in the wardrobe, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, right? Like there's a Pan character in there, and then eventually he became a devil figure, and really Krampus is just a slight evolution of that. So it's just a figure from mythology that goes back thousands of years.
You know, this is an annual tradition for us to talk about this stuff, and I think the same thing happens every year as we get to a point where we've got about 15 minutes left and we've barely scratched the surface. But let's take a few minutes, and, we've talked about some of the obvious ones, but what are some other, Christmas characters that might give us nightmares tonight?
I think one of my favorites comes from Iceland, and it's the Yule Lads. The Yule Lads show up every single day in December, or the latter half of December, and they stay for 2 weeks each. And depending on the day, a different Yule Lad will show up. So, for example, they started on the 12th of December, and the first one was the sheep coat clog, and he's this little creature that comes in and messes with your sheep, and he's going to stay from the 12th to the 25th. And then the gully gawk comes to steal your cow's milk, and then there's one called Stubby who comes to lick your dirty kitchen pots clean. And so they all kind of sneak in at night, and there's one that's like a window peeper and one that's called pot scraper, and he'll come in and he'll find your dirty pots and he'll lick them clean, and it's just kind of creepy. And the bowl licker, a lot of people would take porridge to bed with them and then set the porridge bowl down on the floor and then get it in the morning, only to find that some little creature had licked it clean. Another one is a door slammer that'll just slam doors and keep you awake and keep you afraid all night. And another will steal your candles. Another one peeps through your windows. So every day, one of these different creatures shows up in Iceland. But Iceland also gave us the Yule Cat, which is a great one too. The Yule Cat is also homicidal. He'll kill you. He'll kill you if you're not wearing new clothes on Christmas Day.
Ooh.
And the reason is because everybody's supposed to work hard, and if you work hard, you're going to have enough money for nice new clothes, and you should be wearing them on Christmas Day. And if you're not, the Yule Cat will come along and shred you up and kill you, because obviously you're a lazy person, and you're unfit to be wandering around. And so there's a saying that just like, you're wearing that, the Yule Cat's going to get you. You should be dressed in your finest new clothes on Christmas Day. There's so many. Gosh, the Tomten from Sweden and Norway, this little magical elf that helps you around the house and around your farm all year long, but he asks for an offering of sticky sweet rice pudding on Christmas Eve to be left out for him. And if you don't leave it out, he'll leave you. That's the worst thing he can do, and then you'll have no help at all. So every culture, every country seems to have their own, little version.
I remember talking about one in Italy last year that I don't remember the name of the Italian one.
The Befana.
Yes.
The Italian Christmas witch. She's wonderful. So her story goes back to the three wise men moving through the desert trying to find Bethlehem and find the baby Jesus. And they stop at her house one night and ask if she knows the way. And she says, "I don't, but you're welcome to stay here for the night." And the three wise men come in and say, "This is just the cleanest, nicest house we've ever stayed in." And so she comes around. She flies on a broom. And she delivers toys to good girls and boys. But the very best part is that if the Befana visits you, not only does she leave some gifts behind, she cleans your house. And that's just awesome. I don't know how I get me a Befana, but I'm working on it.
Wow, it sounds like the idea of having someone come help you is a pretty common one.
Well, all these, I mean, the Belschnickel helps you. right? If you don't have the guts to discipline your own kid, the Belschnickel will do it.
Right.
Krampus helps you. They all help you. They all are here to serve us, right? We wouldn't keep them around if they didn't serve us in some way. We wouldn't tell those stories. And man, this is a communal decision. This isn't just a couple people in Hollywood saying, hey, let's make a movie or anything like that. This is, you know, this is society saying, maybe we need these monsters again, so let's start talking about them. And then you start talking about them, and then suddenly there's a Krampus ball, and there's, you know, and then there's a radio special where we're talking about all these old monsters again, and then there's a, you know, Amazon Prime special called Creepy Christmas, and then there's a movie called Krampus. It keeps adding up to the point where I know we've made it when you go to the mall, maybe next year, maybe the year after, and there's a line of kids waiting to see Santa, and right next to him is another line waiting to see Krampus. That's when I know we're in a good place.
We have other religions that celebrate other holidays around the same time of year, and I know that these aren't specifically, the ones we've been talking about aren't necessarily specifically tied to Christmas, but are there any, let's talk about the Jewish faith for Hanukkah. Are there anything specific to Hanukkah?
Oh man, well, so there's the Dybbuk, right, which is a spiritual possession, which, by the way, can be good or bad. There's good Dybbuks, you know. And then there's also the Golem, right? The Golem is this this monster. I don't think it's specific to Hanukkah, but it is specific to Judaism. The Golem is a creature, a mythical creature that rises, you know, out of the air. It's made of clay, right? And then he comes to life.
That's right.
The Golem. Yeah. I mean, every religion has its different monsters. You know, the jinn, of course, for Muslims, and you know, there's all kinds of creatures of legend and lore, and all of them serve some sort of purpose, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't talk about them. But no, I don't think I think the Jews have some catching up to do with the Christian monsters.
So as we, and I think, as you said, we're kind of turning a corner here, but I would say that from my upbringing and my recollection of Christmas, I had no Krampus, I had no Belschnickel, I had none of those types of things. The worst thing I thought I could expect was maybe coal in my stocking. You know, given that, have we whitewashed Christmas?
We have, and that started, you know, it started with Coca-Cola. It started because we had to save the economy, and we needed Santa to do it. And he did, right? Santa gave us that gift. He saved the economy, saved the global economy, and turned it into. Black Friday is a thing. We all understand. Like, little kids go, oh, it's Black Friday, and then you explain to them it's called that because that's when retailers go into the black. They become profitable, right? That's when they move from the red to the black, and become profitable for the rest of the year, and it's become a critical part of our economy, which is, you know, so far removed from the very roots, but not too far, because it was about, like, hey, let's celebrate. We're about to hunker down for the winter. Let's give gifts to each other because, man, if something goes wrong, I might need you, right? I might need to stay at your house for a month or two till the spring if my roof collapses, or you might need me. So I think the roots are still in there. We've just sort of lost our way with, you know, the over saccharine sweet Santa Claus and all the other stuff. And so I think by telling these stories, by telling the ghost stories, and you know, in some respects too, I mean, come on, Christmas Carol is performed in every theater in America every December.
Right.
And that is such a powerful story. I watch the movie every year. I actually read the book every year. It's a very short book. But I watch it every year when I need to get into the Christmas spirit, because it is a reminder to me, man, don't be Scroogey.
Yeah.
You can be redeemed. You can get through this. You can face your past, your present, and your future, and come out on the other side a better person for it. And let this holiday wash over you, right? Let that Christmas magic enter you again. And it does it for me. It does it for me every year.
That and It's a Wonderful Life, which also was not intended to be a Christmas movie per se, but also
right.
has its own paranormal elements, you know, given the fact an angel appears and shows the main character what the world would have been without him.
Yeah, which is very, like, you know, I mean, it's almost borrowing a little bit from Dickens, too.
Sure.
But yeah, and it's great, right? All that stuff is great. Sometimes we got to face our ghosts. We all do. And that's, I mean, that's true every day of the year. And I know for me, like, your ghosts turn into your demons if you don't deal with them. I remember a quote from David Bowie, who talked about he creates art. He writes songs to deal with his ghosts. And then he was very quick to point out, not my demons, my ghosts. Because if I don't deal with the ghosts, they become demons. And that's true. That's
right.
True, I think, of all of us.
Dwayne in our chat room wants to know if you're aware of any Cajun characters for Christmas time.
Oh, I don't. Well, maybe the Rogueroo, you know, the puts on a Santa hat. Otherwise, I'm not sure if there's any specific to Christmas. But the Rogueroo is always around. That's a great one, though. The werewolf.
I want to change the topic just a little bit. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to kind of just go to some general paranormal discussion, because there seems to have been a resurgence in paranormal reality television. And,
yeah,
you know, there's a renewed interest. It kind of ebbed for a while, and it seems to be coming back. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it never goes away. I mean, paranormal TV, years ago, I remember hearing a TV network executive say that we view paranormal now the way that we view cooking shows. Cooking shows will always be on the air. They might become a little more popular or less popular, but some form of a cooking show will now always be on the air, and they view the paranormal the same way. It does ebb and flow, and I think it's interesting, especially, of course, Travel Channel, that's becoming like the all-paranormal channel.
Yeah.
Which, I like pizza, right? But I don't know if I want to eat pizza every night. You know what I mean?
I do.
And so I'm very curious to see how it shakes out. And I know, of course, not all the shows are going to make it, but I know they've renewed a few of them. A few of the new shows have gotten renewed, and that's great. And they'll find their audience and find their home. I think anything that keeps the discussion going is always a good thing. I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful for people that were able to talk about these subjects so much more openly than we could when I was a kid, or even when I started doing this 20 years ago. It just wasn't out in the open like it is, and that's thanks to television and popular culture. So I applaud that. I mean, of course, you know, do I love the way everyone's portraying it? No, of course not. But, you know, I figure if it gets people asking questions, then I'm on board.
Well, I agree with all you've just said, and I don't want you to put anybody, you know, in the crosshairs or under the bus or whatever the phrase is. But is there anyone who or any one of these shows that you think is moving the ball forward at all?
Oh, I mean, sure, they all are to some degree, and I know that's a very political answer, but these things are now really getting set to people's specific tastes. And so it would be like me saying, like, oh, I don't like that band. Like, well, someone else does, you know?
Right.
So the ones I like and don't like, I really do think are kind of irrelevant. I just think I think it's cool that people are exploring these stories. And I actually think what's really great is the independent stuff that you're seeing on YouTube, seeing on Amazon Prime. You know, there's people now saying, like, hey, maybe I don't need a television network. If I've got something to say, I can say it in a podcast. I can say it in a radio show. I can say it in a book, you know? There's a lot of ways to get information out, and I think it's pretty awesome that we live in a time when all these avenues are available to us, and it's great. I mean, you know, YouTube sensations get born overnight because they're doing something new and innovative, and then all of a sudden TV networks are trying to catch up. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's pretty it's pretty interesting, and I just have to say that you know, I had an event, Scaricon, in October, and I brought my first quote unquote YouTube celebrities into the show, and I was amazed at how popular they were. I mean, I just, you know, you don't think of what would be considered an amateur video channel of creating superstars, but these folks truly were superstars, and I was really impressed.
I mean, hey, some of those YouTube channels, if they get like 4, 5, 6 million downloads, that is way more than a network show. Like, way more.
That's a great point. Yeah.
I mean, it's just purely by numbers, they're reaching more people than a network show on Travel or Discovery or whatever. That's just reality.
Okay, so this, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, but I think you've got an answer ready to go here. What is give us your Christmas hit list as far as films that we all should be watching in the next few nights, in the next week?
Oh, yeah, you've got to watch A Christmas Carol, whatever version you like. There's so many. You can go from the Muppets to Disney to, you know, I prefer the Alistair Sim version. That's my very favorite because I think it still holds up, or Scrooge or whatever. I think that's great. I really believe people should watch the Krampus movie if you haven't, because it's just so fun, and it does nail the spirit of what that what he represents, and that he's ultimately here to help us, not to hurt us. And then, you know, shoot, I mean, Christmas Vacation, I can't get through a December without watching that.
It's a great one.
Yeah, got to do it. And come on, man, the brand new New England Legends Creepy Christmas Special. That's it. Go watch all those.
All right, remind folks where they can watch the Creepy Christmas Special.
It's on Amazon Prime Video right now for free if you're a Prime member, and again, 99 cents if you're not. You can download it, and you just go search for New England Legends. You'll find the series. There's 8 episodes up now, and you can go watch all of them. But the Creepy Christmas one I love it because as a kid, I loved when my favorite TV shows did a Christmas special, and I'm just so proud to like have my own, you know. So thrilled that it just came out.
Jeff, I'm going to use your song, I Think My Christmas Tree Is Haunted, as our next bumper song. We're not going to be able to get through the whole thing. It's a 4-minute song, but I'll use it on both sides of the break. But thank you so much for being here with us tonight. It's become a holiday tradition. I love it, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks, man. Good talking again, JV.
Again, make sure you go to the YouTube page. Go to YouTube and subscribe. Just search for JV Johnson. You'll find it there. Make sure you subscribe. And click the notification icon. You'll be able to be alerted when we put new content up or we stream live or whatever it happens to be. It's Beyond Reality Radio. We'll catch you tomorrow night.
Beyond Reality Radio is hosted by Jason Hawes and JV Johnson and produced by Alexandria Johnson and Slick Eddie Edwards for Entercom Radio. Beyond Reality Radio is distributed by Westwood One Radio Networks. Stop by our Facebook page and say hello. Follow the hosts on Facebook as well. For Jason Hawes, follow at jasonhawes.taps. For JV Johnson, follow at jvjparanormal. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Radio or you have a suggestion for a guest, contact Slick Eddie Edwards at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com. Be sure to visit our chat room as well at beyondrealityradio.com. Thanks for listening.